Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yo, and welcome to the 68th episode of Lake of Rage, a Pokemon trading card game podcast. I'm your host, as always, Kevin Clementi, aka Mellow _ Magikarp, and I'm joined today by a very special temporary guest host. Now, you may have noticed the sound is a little bit different today. I'm not recording at my home as usual. We're recording live at Tabletop Village in Seattle, Washington. We're going to be talking with the owner of the best local game store in the entire country. Brian Myers is with me today. Brian, how are you doing?
I am doing great. Hi, everyone. Hello.
Thank you so much for joining me today. This is an episode that I think all competitive players wanted, but they didn't know they wanted. And you might be able to kind of go off of this as well, but everyone who's ever played a competitive CCG, competitive card game, has wanted to own a card store. So we're going to talk a little bit about what it's like owning a card store, what got you into it, and most importantly, for those wondering of like, oh, is this going to be, you know, a lot of talk about Magic and Yu-Gi-Oh? No. Tabletop Village specializes in Pokemon. Those of you watching on YouTube, you can see the wall behind us. This is Brian's office. This is a thing that is always here. So if anyone visits Seattle, first and foremost, come visit. It is amazing here. It is Pokemon-centric, but also, as you'll see as we talk to this man, he is one of the nicest people that you will meet, and or at least he's good at lying about being nice. And most importantly, he knows Seattle. So if you ever visit Seattle and you're wondering, what do I want to do? Come talk to this man down here at Tabletop Village in the International District. So Brian, I want to start off.
Mm-hmm.
How did you come to own a card store?
Mostly because I'm an idiot.
Okay, fair.
I would say it's my family, uh-huh. Right? And yes, I own it, but my whole family participates. And the number one reason is because we had a 5.5-year-old who loved to play Pokemon. And his name is Polaris. He's now 12. He's been playing for 7 years.
In a couple of weeks, he will be the junior world champion.
He is going to be the junior world champion.
it's closer than you think, too.
It is.
He's got that day two invite.
He got the day two invite. He's been working with a lot of folks on getting good at what deck he wants to play. It'll be great. But I would say we started playing Pokemon 5.5 years ago because Katie, who was a professor back then, we were at Emerald City Comic Con, mm-hmm. and she sat down and taught us how to play for 2 days. And then we learned how to play Pokemon.
So this is one of those success stories of those learn to play things that competitive players look at a regional or something, or a Comic Con, for example, and they're like, yeah, whatever. Like, who's going to do that?
Yeah.
It did, in fact, convert.
It converted.
That's so good to hear.
Yeah, it converted from a player to a store owner. Like, what a great job you did, Pokemon.
That's beautiful. They've done what they want.
Yeah. They got someone. But that was the start of us playing Pokemon. And so then I started buying cards from a dude named Jimmy. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy had an online store, and he would show up at the local game stores.
Yep.
And he would basically sell Pokemon cards out of his trunk. That's mm-hmm. what it was, right? He was one of those online stores, but he was a local guy, and he was in the community. He knew a lot of people. He actually sponsored Pablo Mellow Yellow at the time, right? They were
Yellow all, Swallow.
Yellow
Swallow. I got to put some respect on his name. That was one of the first people I
Yellow
watched.
Swallow, yes, Yellow Swallow. Yes. And he was out there. Jimmy was doing things.
Yeah.
And then Jimmy got a job, a real job, a really well-paying job.
Yeah.
And was like, hey, Brian, I'm selling my inventory. What do you want to buy? Because he knew that I bought a lot. And I was like, I want to buy the business. He's like, really? And I was like, yeah, let me just keep it going because we need it. And we'll get into that story, why we need it more later on down the road. Yeah. But we needed it, and I didn't want it to just go away.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so I already had looked into how do we get cards outside of Jimmy.
Yeah.
And then there's distributors, but you had to have a business license. And then I called a distributor, like, oh, you have to get on the list, and then you have to get this, and you have to get that, and you have to do all these things,
yep,
and jump through all the hoops to get, like, be able to buy cards. So I was like, oh, I don't want to really do that. Jimmy, let me buy your business. And it was like, the name too? And I was like, yeah, I like the name.
It's a good name.
It's a good name. And really, he wanted it to be a place where we could play Pokemon,
mm-hmm,
and on a tabletop, not just the video games, but we play the video games too, right?
Yep. There's a lot of stuff you can do here.
Yes. And it'd be a village. And yep, the biggest part is the village part, right? Where people can't, it takes a village to raise a kid.
Yep.
And that's the main premise behind it.
Which is the best thing about that analogy is there is a Pokemon summer camp going on here for a handful of kids who are currently out there in the store doing whatever. They're all playing games together. Mm-hmm. So it takes a village to raise a kid is literally happening here at the store.
Yes. And that's how we became literally a store owner. I mean, there was a lot of things to do.
Yeah.
We started off small and simple, right? We started buying cards from distributors,
mm-hmm,
getting orders from whoever was around,
yeah,
putting together orders, going to the tournaments, handing off the orders, right? Like, that's what we did. Like, we just had extra cards, and then we sold them what we got, whatever we would open.
Mm-hmm.
And we weren't, I mean, you sell 10, 12 boxes.
Yeah.
You know, at like, we're selling what, for $90, $100 a piece.
Yep.
There isn't like no money in selling sealed product.
No, because you're getting from a distributor, you're not paying like $40 for a box or whatever. No, you're still paying almost the same amount you're selling it
for. Yes. And there is very little profit margin,
mm-hmm,
in selling these boxes. Why? That's, and when online, you can buy them for $100.
Yep.
Back then, it was like, well, if you sell it online, then you gotta pay for the shipping.
Yep.
You gotta, you know, box it up. You gotta pay for the labor putting it together.
Yep.
And then if you put it on eBay or a TCG player, they're gonna take their cut.
Yep.
So what's your margin? $5? Like, what's the
it's
point?
Not it, worth
it's
it.
Not worth it. It's, and it still isn't worth it. It's still, it's not worth selling that kind of stuff like on TCG player or thing. Like, it's better for us to sell it to customers in store.
Yeah, which is also better for the customer, because anyone who's bought in a box who's listening to this, you don't, it feels bad. You're like, oh, I'm gonna buy a box, so great. And then you're like, a week later, this thing is gonna show up, and then I get to open it.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes you get the pre-order and it shows up on the right time, mm-hmm, or whatever, but for the most part, it's like, I want to go and I want to open it now. Like, that's what I want to do when I have a box of cards.
Yeah.
I don't want to sit there and wait for it to ship to me eventually. And, you know, also hope that it arrives. Some sellers are more credible than others online. Yeah. You find an offer that's too good to be true.
Oh, I have
Shocker.
Those. I have some too good to be true offers in my glass case that were like, Ryan, I paid $600 for this X-Men Evolution box back when it was $1,000. And I was like, too good to be true. He's like, yes. Here's a
fake all one. Fake.
All fake.
We opened up one of those, actually. One of the packs. It was one of the streams that we've been opening on twitch.tv/mellow_magicart. My Twitch channel. Got a plug in there, right? Every set opening we've been opening. And you gave me some of the...
Yeah.
Or one of the packs.
One of the fake.
You only needed to open one for it to be like, oh, this is just terrible to look at. The cards feel bad. The pack was just put together poorly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, if someone could have inspected this in person, they would have known immediately. This is a fake product.
Yes.
But you can't see it because in a picture, it either looks good or they just send a picture of the real thing, right?
Yeah. A picture of the real thing. Yeah.
So I always got to be careful there.
Yeah, and I think that's the origin story, right? Like, that's how we started the business. And then it happened to be back in the, early 19th. The late 20, what do you call it? The late 20 teens? So 2019,
okay,
and before the pandemic, right, was actually started, we started looking at, oh, you know what? We're doing, like, this is fun.
Mm-hmm.
We should open a actual store. And after, you know, 2 years of, like, working with the community, we learned that, like, the community was going to support us. Like, they also saw that we needed the space. We wanted somewhere to play Pokemon. That was for Pokemon players and Pokemon lovers.
Yes.
Where we didn't have it. And so I owned a Taekwondo gym that was gifted to me by the old master. Taekwondo was falling off. Mm-hmm. it wasn't being sustainable, and it was being hard to like continue to pay coaches, pay for a business, and then, you know, keep the place running.
Yeah.
But we saw the opportunity, like, for the space, we could convert it and then put down some tables mm-hmm. and chairs and see where, you know, see if people would come and play.
And we did.
Yeah, we did, right?
We did. I remember playing in here when it was a taekwondo gym. I remember the coaches would be training someone on the other side of a wall, and we were playing an expanded tournament.
Yeah. And you could still do it. I mean, and we saw that, like, okay, cool. Well, it's people will show up to play if we give them a space to play.
Yep.
And then the pandemic came, taekwondo completely died.
Yep.
And we're like, well, this pandemic's going to go away pretty soon. Like, let's just suck it up. Like, let's grab the tables. Let's, like, make the space. Let's put in some, you know, some shelving.
Yeah.
And then see if, you know, see what, when the pandemic's done, we'll be like, well, I'll be off ready to go.
Yep.
Yeah.
And,
so
it did eventually happen.
In hindsight, I probably shouldn't have, because, like, it was super high risk.
Yeah.
Right? Like, even everyone else was, the one person that said was my doctor was like, and he's who was also a Pokemon player and Pokemon dad and a Pokemon person was like, this pandemic might be around for a while. I was like, you don't know what you're talking about.
Nah. The same person was telling me the same thing all the time.
6 months, we'll be fine. We'll be fine. Yeah. And so the pandemic came and we skyrocketed. Like,
we were the one business that
went to the moon, because people wanted cards. They wanted to collect. They wanted to buy. And then instantly, like, all these people in the whole Seattle was like, there's a Pokemon store? Oh, let's go. And they bought me out.
Oh, yeah.
They bought everything. Everything I had, like, down to, like, the old, I had maybe 1,000 Shining Legends, like, packs that were just sitting there chilling, right?
I want to give a quick shout out to this one.
Yeah.
When Brian originally was like, I bought the whole inventory, he's showing me around, because I'd been buying cards from you. You know, I was like, give me these singles. Like, I need Aggro, right? Yeah. No one else has them.
Yeah.
And he's like, look at all these. And there's just tons of these boxes full of Shining Legends. Like, why would you want this trash? No one's ever going to want it.
No one.
And then the pandemic happens, and suddenly those packs are like, what, $10?
$10, $11. Yeah. We could have sold them at $20 at one point.
Yeah.
And I just felt bad. I couldn't do it. I was like, I got these for like $2. Like, I can't charge 10x.
Oh, because it was such a bad set.
It was a horrible set. Yeah. Like, what are people digging? And they were
the shiny cards weren't that expensive.
No, I don't think so. Not then.
No.
And it was a crazy time to like have inventory. And we had inventory. We had old inventory.
That was a big
generations thing. Boxes, like, right? Like, you know, another 5 years ago, like,
technically bad set.
Bad set.
That no one had it. Because everyone bought it and stopped buying it, so they stopped printing it.
Yeah.
And then there you are.
I just got it. And I'm selling it for MSRP, and people are like, oh, $20? How many can I get? They're like, how many do you want? I have like 30 of these. Like, just buy it. Like, what? And I think that became the, like, what I was known for. Like, Brian has good stuff for, like, good prices.
Yep.
I was like, they're good prices because that's what MSRP was.
Yes.
Right? And MSRP is a good price.
You walk in here and everything back there is MSRP, with the exception of the occasional, like, this is a rare collectible that's unopened, right? Like, obviously, those types of things, they're no longer selling Wizard of the Coast unopened box for MSRP, right? But you go back there and any of the, like, ETBs or anything like that, they're all just in the last, like, 8 sets or whatever.
Correct, yeah.
You know you're going to pay MSRP for those things.
Or less.
Yes.
Yeah, or less. And that's the stuff that isn't is often consignment or because I also what we do, we buy, sell, trade, right?
Yeah.
And there are folks that, like, either they need to they want to get rid of their old stuff so they can trade up into new stuff and then get new cards.
Yeah.
Or sometimes they have old stuff and they need money. Right. Yeah. And I like to help. It's fine. We're helping people out, like, getting what they want when they need it. and I get what we want, and then our customers are able to buy it at an affordable price.
Yeah.
Rather than
one of
like,
the things that sound a little sketch, but like it's not, because it's like this hobby is a great investment.
Yeah.
If someone needs money, it's like this is a great thing to have sitting in your back pocket of like, all right, now here's the boxes I've been sitting on.
Yeah.
It's a perfect trade off, right?
Yeah. Well, and that's how we see it, right? Like it's a service we provide because one, we hope that the community one will buy it from us.
Yep.
And then when they're ready to sell it, they need somewhere to put, you know, like be able to sell it.
Yeah.
So if you come in and you buy a box at $140 and then you sit on that box for 2 years and now your box is worth $300 and you come to me and be like, Brian, my box is worth $300. Can I get $250 for it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course. Cause you bought it from me. Like, and then I'm gonna put it back on sale and I'm going to make money again off of it.
Yeah.
Right. And that's, I feel like it's the fair trade, you know, like that comes around being and owning a store. Like you sell at the correct prices, and then when you buy it back and you buy it back at the correct prices, everyone gets to win.
Yep.
And that's what you want, right? It's like we all invested into it and then we all get to get the rewards, right?
Yeah.
We get to share in the equity.
And that's something, so everyone listening to this, and I know it because I'm on Twitter with everyone else, or I'm in Discords with other locals where, you know, some stores would have, use Hidden Fates as the big example.
Yeah.
Hidden Fates in stock, ETBs for $100+, right? People, and if you're listening to this and you bought that, I don't blame you, because Hidden Fates is a cool set, hard to find, but everyone who bought it that I've ever heard of for that marked up price is like, I'm not shopping at the store.
Yeah.
Like, they're the only one that has it and I want it.
Yeah.
But then you completely lose that, like, I hate this place now.
Yeah.
And as someone who hates opening sealed product, I ain't buying from those places ever.
Yeah.
Because, like, I know how much that thing is. I have this stupid Pokemon vending machine across the street from me.
Yep.
I love it. Anyone listen to this who's never been to the Seattle area or, like, anywhere within the surrounding, there's these vending machines that only sell Pokemon cards at grocery stores. Freaking amazing.
It's awesome.
I've gotten any collectible set from the past 2 years. You just walk in. You're lucky. Boom.
Yeah.
Walk out with MSRP, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that's what also caused the whole, the scalping and the gouging and the fights in lines and then the attacks in Target and the whole thing in Walmart, right? It's because people were scalping. And honestly, there were stores that were scalping too. So what, these people feel justified.
Yeah.
They're like, well, I'm just charging what the store is charging. The store is charging $150 for this box. Why can't I charge $150 for the box?
Yeah.
Why can't you? That store is doing it. And then people would come to my store and be like, Brian, how much? $50. That's how much it costs.
That's
it's a ETB with 10 packs in them. Yeah, $50.
And I got to say, it was also nice. You always had signups in advance.
Yeah.
And a limit.
Yes.
It wasn't like the first person to sign up bought your entire inventory. Yeah. Always a big deal there.
Yeah. And I think that was started when, as soon as we, you know, I think it was Champion's Path.
Yeah.
It was one of the first ones where it's like,
the shiny Zards.
Yeah, the shiny Zards, right? Everybody wanted a box.
Yeah.
And if they could buy 10 boxes, they would have bought 10 boxes at $50. They would have spent $500. They would have dropped it.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But I didn't have, you know,
no.
500 boxes to give everyone 10, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I had 50 boxes and the sign-up list was for 50 people. And then later on down the road, it became like the list got too long.
Yeah.
So then it became, hey, I got 200 products. I'm out of my customer list.
Mm-hmm.
We started going down the list and who's continued to buy regardless. And whoever had the biggest spends, like we're like, hey, we're offering you pick what you want. Pick one product, please.
Yeah.
And even down to when we got to celebrations, it was, can I have a UBC? Okay. I'm only getting 10 of these.
Mm-hmm.
So we gave out the first 10, were for the 10 top customers, and everybody else got ETBs down the line, but we still had enough to get everybody at least got something.
Yep. Right?
Everyone on the list got something. And then there's still the mini tins for people to come in and buy and whatnot. And then we got restocked.
Yep.
And it was huge.
I remember walking in here on a Friday and you just had them.
Yeah.
And you're like, do you want one? I was like, well, yeah, this set's cool. Like, I want to open more of this set.
Dude, the one thing we didn't do was store it all online and just, like, ship it.
Yeah.
Because we could have.
Yeah.
We definitely,
oh, yeah.
Like, I think we accidentally once was just trying to put it onto the POS system.
Mm-hmm.
And then accidentally got online and someone got 50 of them. 50 ETBs. I'm like, I don't don't even have that many. Like, yeah, it's just, no. It's wrong. Sorry. Like, say sorry. Then they paid for it and everything.
Yeah.
Because it was at MSRP.
Of course.
And then I was like, hey, I'm sorry. Like,
this was an error. Like, that's
the order. Thing. You will get a refund on this.
Yeah.
But yeah, it happened.
So I'm curious then, and there might be some parts that you can't say due to like contract stuff, uh-huh. but how does it work going through a distributor? If you say, I want 100 ETBs, do you get 100 ETBs or is it not that simple?
Now we do. It's kind of scary, but now we do.
Is that because the shop's grown or because the hobby's no longer this like massive crunch?
All of it, right? Okay. So I would say a year ago.
Yeah.
You order 100 ETBs, and they would have said, like, all right, cool. We'll see what we can send you. And you would get, like, 25, 30, right? It would be, like, two cases and a broken box of five.
Yeah, just not even close.
We're not even close. And then I would say maybe 6 months ago, then we're right around Astral, right?
Yep.
Even Brilliant Stars, we ordered, like, you know, 200.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, cool, here's 200. And we're like, oh, that's a lot.
We weren't expecting to get all of them.
Yeah, we didn't want all. Are you sure? Like, are you sure? Well, what happened was, one, Pokemon fixed their printing.
Yes. Right?
And we know this because we are close enough to Pokemon where Pokemon employees come by and they're very friendly and we talk and mm-hmm. we chat. And I feel bad for them, but Pokemon employees are the last ones to get product.
Yes.
I don't know if anybody knows that, but employees don't get handed everything they want, whatever they want. They get one and they get at the very end.
Yep. Like right? Get free product.
Yeah.
But like you said, it's eventually
they get one thing later on down the road. Yeah, like this is before the volunteers get product before those guys get product.
Yeah.
Everybody else gets, but anyways. Like,
can't convert media gets product first. We are very much the first as content creators. Yes. We are like very high on that priority list.
You guys get the stuff first.
Yeah.
And then later on employees get it. But you know, they've even said that like they're gonna fix the production. They're gonna fix the printing. And sure enough, from Astral Radiance, they fixed it.
Yeah.
Right? So when we ordered what we ordered, we got exactly what we ordered. Like, and it was good. I feel like we might have ordered a little bit too heavy, but then it's also, I picked up more on mm-hmm. top of what I thought I would sell.
Yeah.
And then it was like, hey, Brian, got some orders that got canceled. And it was like, why cancel orders? And they're like, well, some businesses not doing so well.
Yeah.
Right. And I would assume it's the businesses that continue to either do the mass buying and then reselling mm-hmm. online, and they couldn't sell enough of the mass product, right?
Yeah.
So if you're trying to sell 1,000 boxes to make $5 a box just so you can make $5,000 and then nobody buys your 5,000 boxes, well, you're stuck on inventory.
You're out big time.
And people are getting hurt. And I think that's what caused a lot of the big stores, even the big stores slowed down.
Yeah.
Like honestly, a lot of the big stores started asking me if I wanted any.
Really?
Yeah. And they're like, hey, do you need product? No, I got my own. Like, really? What do you got, though?
Like, we're good over here. Yeah, we're good. What are you going to charge me? Because I might be into this idea.
And honestly, some of them did actually, they matched distributor pricing. They're like, and I'm like.
They're essentially taking a loss at that.
Because, and they could do it because they needed to just dump products.
Yeah.
Some of the biggest stores were trying to sell us their product because even if they could dump it all, they were still making money mm-hmm. off the, you know, 5,000 units that they sold at MSRP or just above, right? And so that got them to where they wanted to be. But if you, when you buy from a distributor, I have three major distributors.
How many distributors are there, like, total? I always assumed it was, like, just, like, two major, like, West Coast, East Coast type things.
No, there, as far as Pokemon sales, I think there's six.
Really?
I think there's six. Oh, and wow. one of them that manages most of the out, you know, European.
Yeah.
And then there are four or five in the US. I have three of them.
Nice.
I have three of them because I've been trying to gain more inventory, right? Because from 2000 to 20 to 22, product's been limited.
Yeah.
So you got it where you could get it. And at that time, you didn't care about even the price.
Yeah.
Like, you could pay more just so I could have product in stock. And it's funny because I'd have my distro would even tell me, like, oh, we have to charge you more on... So we just got an Evolving Skies.
Yep.
Right? Again, the reprint. Small reprint. I ordered 300 boxes. I got 30, I think, total. Right? And at the end of the day.
Yeah.
30 total from all three of my distributors. So their one distributor, which I've had for years, was like, oh, your cost is going to go up like $7.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that's fine. I have another distributor. He's like, oh, it's going to be like $3 above your normal cost. I'm like, that's fine.
Yeah.
The one distributor is like, it's going to be $30 above your normal cost. And I was like, oh, that's fine. You got to take them.
Yeah.
Right? You got to take them when you can get them. And some distributors have weird practices and the prices change here and there. And then some distributors, like, the more you buy,
uh-huh.
the bigger your spend is, the more your allocation is, right?
Yeah.
So even when you get dropped, like Astral Radiance, and Astral Radiance is a great set for players, right? We love it.
It should be for collectors, too, because the characters' rares are so, like, you get 16 hits in a box, and you're like, I got ripped off.
Yeah, it's it. Like, it's a sick set. What's crazy is, though, like, at a certain point, when there's the printing is full and capped out,
yeah.
there's so many boxes on the street. So the prices start to plummet.
Yep.
And I think at one point, Astral Radiance went down to, like, $85, right? Which is cheap for a brand new set with so many good cards. And then you got, Evolving Skies gets a reprint, and people are selling them at, like, $170, $180 already. They're like, oh, man, I'm just going to keep it at MSRP.
Is this the Rayquaza effect? Like, is there any? Because collectors will always say they're giving us more Charizards, they're giving us more Eeveelutions, and that's what's causing. Is there truth to that you're finding? The Eeveelutions and the Rayquaza and the Charizards really do drive an individual set?
Yes and no.
Yes and no. Okay.
Right? Because nothing drove Evolving Skies in the very beginning. Like, when it first came out, it was a great set. It had Eevees. It sold, right? It had Rayquaza.
Yep.
But it stopped. And boxes just sat on the shelf.
Yeah.
Right? And they sat there for a long time until someone determined that these Umbreon and alternate arts were worth $300. And that's what drove it, right? Yeah. That's what drove the market to go crazy on the boxes.
Yep.
Because now, if they determine that... And whoever does this, I don't know who does this, but it's the people who will pay that price.
Yeah.
Right? If there's 1,000 people that will pay $350 for a card,
mm-hmm.
then that card is not worth $350. There's no denying it.
Yeah.
Right? And when that inventory runs out and the prices get higher and higher, there's no way to say that, well, that box might have one of those cards. So now the box is worth more money. And that's what drives the sales, right? That's not just the fact that there is Eevees, Rayquaza, or Charizard. Right, if that was the case, then Brilliant Stars should take off again. Right, we can go back to Darkness Ablaze. I have Darkness Ablaze sitting on the shelf. It has Charizard in there.
That's true.
Come buy it. I have like 20 like ETB boxes of Darkness Ablaze. There's Charizards in it. Come get it.
If you're looking for Darkness Ablaze, come to Seattle.
And that's the thing, right? It's like, yes, sometimes.
Yeah.
Initially, yes. Sometimes Charizard will drive the set.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's what are the cards worth? Like right now, the only thing driving Astral Radiance is Palkia.
Yeah.
Right?
And just the fact that it's a competitive card.
Competitive card.
That
and that's what
people need four of.
Yes. That's the only reason people will buy it.
Yeah.
It's because they want to. They're like, Brian, why don't you break it open? And like, I have one customer who'll come in and be like, we'll do pack battles with me. Pack battles are $6 a pack. That's $3, times 36, which is. Really, really cheap if you open the whole box.
Yeah.
And he's just hoping to hit a pocket in there. <He's done. laughs> Come on, we'll do 10. It's like $30. And we'll break them open. And still, there's no pockets.
No, it's a hard to get card.
It's a hard to get card.
I opened, the full box and ETB mm-hmm. and pulled zero Palkias. Zero Radius, too, for what it's worth. And that's another card that seems to be
yep.
a bit of a chase. I still don't own any. because it's like a $5 holo rare.
It's a $5 holo rare.
Yeah. And that's, and I don't know when Palkia is. If I own Palkia, I don't know where he is. But, you know, that's an extra, like, every single box has these extra, like, well, I'm going to get my money back more and more, right?
Yes. And I think that's, again, when we come down to how distribution works and how the cards work and what causes the prices to, at the end of the day, you know what? Nobody knows. Nobody knows why. You have all these online viewers. I mean, I watch a lot of content creators. You know, I like to, you know, peruse Danny, you know, Danny stuff. And even, what's the magic guy?
Oh, gosh, I have no idea.
Alpha Investments, right?
Oh,
Ruby and Alpha Investments, right?
I haven't heard of them, yeah.
Even just to know what people are thinking about, why, what causes the market to do the crazy things that the market does.
Yeah.
And then you have to think in, like, oh, there's an economy, and then there's a pandemic, and then there's global inflation, right? There's all these things going on.
Yeah.
And when it comes down to it, we don't know why. It just does what it does.
Yeah.
And then I think there are, you know, the true believers, like I feel like I was like, the whatever will happen, will happen.
Yep.
And if you do what good people do, which is you build community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a long time ago, I learned as a salesman, I've been doing sales for 20 years.
Yeah.
As a salesperson, it's not about doing sales. It's about making friends.
Yep.
And building relationships and, you know, sticking to your word and having integrity. Right, that's what makes a good store, is you can go there and that's what you find.
Yep.
Is like good, honest people.
Yeah.
Right? And then what you mostly find is, oh, I remember when I was like 12 or 15 years old and I brought my cards and this guy paid me like $10 for my Charizard and ripped me off.
Yeah.
There's a lot of those stories. Right?
Oh, I believe that.
Yeah, the fear and the hate of, like, you buy from trading card places, and then you know that you're going to get gypped when you go and sell your cards back, because they're gonna take you for all you got.
Yeah. It's hard for anyone who's like, and this is probably no one listening to the podcast, but like, you may have been in the situation when you were younger or whatever, when you're not in the hobby, but you have the cards, so you don't know enough to tell someone they're wrong.
Yeah.
Because it's very easy to be like, well, I looked this up on eBay and they're like, oh, it's a different card because of X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is a different card.
Yeah.
I've had coworkers who are like, I have my old Pokemon collection. Like, I looked this up and it's an $800 card. And I'm like, no, this isn't. This is not first edition. And this is not near mint. This is a $10 card, maybe.
Yeah. This is not PSA graded, buddy.
Right. Like, the other one is a PSA 10. This one has a giant crease down the middle.
Yeah.
Like, you chewed on this one. Like, I don't know what you want from this. And I assume you have people come in with those same things, and it's like, how do you get that, like, trust of, like, I'm not trying to rip you off. Like, this is just not the same thing as what you saw on eBay.
And that, it's fun, actually. Yeah. Like, it's, I feel like sitting and explaining to customers how everything works and the way, the cards are conditioned, and then even with young kids is the most important part, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
Teaching them conditioning and, like, how to take care of it, because that's the first thing I taught Polaris. It's like, look, I know you like that card, but you can't pull it out of your pocket and ask me how much it's worth. I'm gonna tell you probably nothing. Like, it's not even in a sleeve.
Yeah, that's, no one taught me that stuff.
Yeah.
Otherwise, because I'd love to be like, oh, when I was a kid, I had X, Y, and Z, and if I'd kept them, they would have been worth nothing.
Yeah.
Because I played with my Blastoise and Gyarados with no sleeves.
Yes.
Like, they were beat back.
Yeah. Ooh, I got energy. Slam that sucker on there. And I see it today, too. Like, kids be playing, even with the sleeves, I'm like, please stop slamming your cards down. I'm not going to buy them back from you. Like, if you keep curling your cards like that and keep bending on, I'm not buying that back from you 5 years from now.
It's an important part of the competitive debate. Mash versus Riffle Shuffling. Can you tell? Is there actual value loss from Riffle Shuffling?
Yes.
There is.
Depending on who you are, yes. Lee Bowie's card. Lee's cards. Corey Moneymaker's cards. Those cards are worth less. 100%. They're worth less. Like, and it's because they go hard.
Yeah.
Lee shuffles his cards hard. He does. I don't think he cares.
He's never going to sell those cards.
He's never going to sell them. I mean, he might trade them into me and be like, Brian, can I get this, this, and this? And be like, I guess.
Yeah, surely. Like, your card is just a Paco shell.
Yeah, like, your card is crimped. I'm going to give you a dollar for it. Like, it would have been worth 10.
But he'll take that dollar.
He'll take that.
And then a competitive player will come in and buy that damaged card. Because mm-hmm. I will happily buy a moderately played for less.
Yeah. I should just have him sign him and be like, look, this is played by Lee Bowie. Is it worth something? Like, I don't know. It's already damaged.
So from the professional, there is a difference. For all of our riffle shufflers out there.
Yeah. There is a difference.
Be careful.
You will lose value over time, right? I mean, and you can look at the most played cards and the cards that go into deck after deck after deck.
Ultra Ball. Like
Ultra Ball, your gold Ultra Balls are often damaged. VS Seekers were heavily damaged, right? Your Professor Sycamores, your Full Arts, right? They're all like just, and for a long time, like, you always go, like, oh my god, I love this card, like, bam.
Because N was like, it was legal for like 6 years, right?
Yeah, it's good card. Most people,
you only unsleeve it to put it in a new sleeve. Yes. Like, that was, it was in every deck.
Yeah, you just moved it from sleeve to, and you only, sometimes you only had one or two.
Yeah.
Right, so it's the same one in every deck that you
played. Why would you switch it out? Yeah, exactly. You
just moved it, like, oh, new deck, same card. Yes, and they come back, and they're used, and they're played. And some of them are, I mean, to me, they're still beautiful. That's, like, you know, some of the cards on the wall, like, are that way. They were cards that people played with, and that's why they end up on the walls, because they're damaged. There's a golden execute, like, right? I tried to do a flip right there, right?
One of the gold.
Yeah, it's damaged.
They're really pretty cards.
Yeah, beautiful cards, but like, not worth anything.
Yeah, because it's too damaged for any collector.
Two damage for any collector, no longer playable.
Okay, it's not even good in a sleeve anymore.
Yes, then. I mean, a lot of them aren't. They're, like, so bent now that, like, if you put it in the deck, like, marked card.
Yep, you get deck checked.
Deck checked, you're done.
That was an interesting one with the amount of people who'd get deck list errors because of their ace spec. But it's like, I have to play this because there's no other ace specs available.
Yes.
Yeah, it's always that interesting. But anyway, so going back to kids coming in, you're teaching them how to take care of their cards and stuff like that. Is that always a big deal? Like a kid comes in, buys a pack, they pull a Colossal V.
Yeah.
Are you giving them a sleeve and telling them
100%.
Immediately?
Yeah, it doesn't matter which V it is, right? Which kind of, if you teach kids early that like anything shiny, anything that you like, I mean, I'll tell them that all the time. Do you like the card? If you like the card, put it in a sleeve, put it in your binder.
Yeah.
Right? You don't have a binder here, put it in a hard sleeve. Right, take care of your cards, especially the cards that you like, because later on someday, it's not just that you might be able and want to sell it. It might be you might want to give it to someone.
Yeah,
you might want to give it to your children. Right, I'm sure children aren't thinking about having children, but
no,
I think of it that way as an adult and a parent. Like I wish I would have saved. I mean, my Magic deck from 1996 is like back there somewhere.
Yeah,
you know, and if Polaris ever plays Magic, be like, here you go, man. This is like. Worth $5,000.
Right.
I'm sorry, but I didn't take care of him when I played with him, but I wish I would have. And everybody sees him like, oh, that card's still worth money, even though it's damaged. I'm like, yeah, I just wish someone would have told me back when I was a kid. They're like, probably take care of those cards better.
No one told us anything. No one knew back then. Playing with a deck in penny sleeves wasn't unheard of.
Yeah.
As like, I'm protecting my cards.
Yeah.
Because it was something. That's what you did. Yeah. Dragon Shields didn't exist. Ultra Pros, I mean, they might have existed, but they weren't everywhere. They weren't pushed by store owners and stuff like that. Of like, hey, you should protect your cards.
No.
Or they weren't just plain given out.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine the store that I'd bought Pokemon cards from actually just like giving me like, here, take these things, take these sleeves, take a hard case.
Yeah. Please put them in something. Like,
yes.
Take care of your stuff. Because that way, because I still have, I have young adults that show up and be like, How much is this worth?
Yeah.
I'm like, what did you do to it? Like, that's not worth anything. And it's heartbreaking to some of them, right?
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, man, you're telling me this card was worth like $1,000? And I was like, would have been.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know why you, what did you do with it? He's like, I used to just put it in, you know, wrap it up in a rubber band and put it in my pocket.
Yeah. And it was always the top card in the rubber band because it was the coolest one.
Yeah.
And that's the one getting all the damage.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Never fail.
Yeah. I have kids.
Oh yeah,
two of them. I hope they take care of them. Oh, and the 3-year-old, right? And that's how early they'll learn. They'll learn at 3 years old.
Yeah,
that it needs to go on a sleeve. He'll tell people, it's like, you have to put it in the sleeve. Put it in the sleeve, and then put it in the binder.
And I can confirm. I've seen your youngest open up packs, and immediately, I pulled something good, and I know it's good because it's shiny.
Yeah,
it's that simple.
Yeah, it's that simple. And then he puts it in his sleeve. Let's put it in his sleeve.
Oh, yeah.
Perfect.
right? So
yeah.
Why? So you played Pokemon, obviously. You and Polar, or you and your oldest played Pokemon, yes. Right?
Yeah.
Why is the store Pokemon only? Or not only, only. There's also Digimon here. There's also Metazoo here.
There's a little bit of Dragon Ball, a little bit of Magic.
There will be One Piece.
One Piece, for sure. 100%.
Let's go. But it is mostly Pokemon. You walk outside, or you look up on anyone who's going to, okay, go to Google and check out Tabletop Village. One of the very first things you'll find on Google Maps is a picture of the mural outside.
Yes.
Which is
Pokemon. Yeah, Pokemon.
It is, yeah. It is your, what, Ghastly, Haunter, Gengar?
Yep.
If I remember correctly.
Yep.
And then...
No, Muk, not Gengar.
Muk, okay.
Yeah. And then there's more. There's
Snorlax somewhere. There used to be a Snorlax somewhere.
It's kind of a Snorlax. I don't know. The PD artist changed it. And then you come right in and there's another mural.
Yep.
Right?
You got another mural. You continue to walk in the store. You see Pokemon Go posters. You see gym challenge stuff. You see an uncut sheet of first edition Machamps hanging up there. You see it's Pokemon everywhere.
Yes.
Here. Why?
Pokemon's the best. No. Well,
that's it. Done.
Done. My draw. One, because it doesn't exist. I feel like it didn't exist.
Yeah.
Right? I feel like it still doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And this is primarily because the majority of local game store owners don't find Pokemon as their moneymaker, right?
Yeah.
I feel like they look at Pokemon as like this side thing that not anymore. It used to be just a side thing. The kids would buy packs.
Yeah.
They would sell a few packs here and there.
Yep.
Some of the, you know, the boxes. But they were like, you know what sells that? Walmart sells that. Target sells that. You know, Pokemon Center sells that. They can buy that stuff from them.
Yeah.
It wasn't a moneymaker to them. But then you go in a store and there's like cases and cases and cases of like Magic. There's dedicated like deck builders for Magic. There's all these boxes for Magic, collectibles for Magic, sleeves for Magic, playmats for Magic.
Yeah.
Everything's for Magic.
Yeah.
And then then there's Yu-Gi-Oh, and so 75% Magic, 25% Yu-Gi-Oh, and you're 24% Yu-Gi-Oh, 1% like Pokemon and everything else.
Yep.
Right?
Oh yeah, and Gotcha, would you want to play anything else here?
Yeah.
Like Pokemon already is so low in the Seattle area, but
yeah.
Ooh, gosh forbid anything but the big three.
Yeah. And you would go to these stores, and I would go to these stores, and I would bring my kid to these stores.
Yep.
And we would meet up with a few friends. We would play some games, right? We'd be in a cup or a challenge, because that's the only time we would actually go there.
Oh,
of course. They would have league sometimes, but nobody really went to league. Like, we went there when it was getting close to a cup.
Yep.
Or getting close to the regional, we would go to league and then we would play just so we could get some practice in.
Yeah.
Because they had a dedicated hour for us to play.
Yep.
And then you'd get through that hour and it'd be like, Pokemon players, time to go.
We need Magic.
Well, Magic's
they have a tournament. There's going to be a draft.
Coming in.
Yep.
And then they would give us the first, you know, like the first 3 hours of the day.
Yeah.
So you had to show up there hella early.
Yep.
Right? And be like, okay, Pokemon, go, hurry up, get out. And it was like, I hated it. I hated that feeling of like, we had no home.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if you go to any of the big stores around here.
Yep.
Like, Magic, they have a home for.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you can play Magic there all day. There's 5-10 players, people playing Magic all the time. Right? You go to, and then they have Yu-Gi-Oh. Yu-Gi-Oh, there's two stores that do Yu-Gi-Oh.
Yeah.
And you can go there anytime. There's people playing Yu-Gi-Oh. But there's nowhere where, like, the Pokemon players could go.
Yes.
They come to play.
Yep.
And that's why it's primarily Pokemon. And it was a scary thing to do because you go and you look at people and they'd be like, oh, you can't just do one game. If you just do one game, you're not gonna make it.
Yep.
Right? You have to do Magic. You have to 100% do Magic, because if you don't do Magic, no one's gonna buy anything from you. Like, Magic is your moneymaker.
Yeah.
Make money selling Magic. I said no. I don't need to make money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
I'm fine.
Business owner, never make money.
Yeah, I'm just gonna sell Pokemon cards and just live off of love. And it worked. It did. And that's what it was, is that I even then recognized there wasn't the space.
Yeah.
And everybody, like, if you can find niche markets, even in any business sense, mm-hmm. right? Like, and be the first and the only, then you get the whole market.
Yeah. Right?
And if you, one, love and treat that market and create it into a community and not just customers,
yeah,
then your community shows up, right? And they want to play and they want to enjoy and they'll support the business anyway.
Yep.
And at that point, because we're able to do it throughout the pandemic, we're now like, we positioned ourselves as, I keep getting told, one of the only Pokemon stores, like, in the U.S.
From my understanding, that is a yes.
I think so.
Every time on stream where I'm talking about the store and, like, yeah. why I love it, like, why I put the logo on everything and, like, yeah. hey, you know, check it out. It's like, because it's dedicated Pokemon. Everyone's like, no, it's not. Like, that's not a thing. And it's like, yeah. yes, that is, in fact, a thing.
Yeah.
Just here it's a thing.
And so the Pokemon Go people showed up.
Yeah.
Right? And there was 150 people.
Yeah, because GoFest was just in Seattle last weekend. Seattle. Yeah. yeah.
Right? And they showed up and they're like, it's all Pokemon. They're like, there's no place like this.
Yeah.
They're like, this is so cool. And they enjoyed themselves. And again, it was cool to see Pokemon people who were there because they love Pokemon
yeah.
find a home and say, oh, we can come here and play Pokemon and no one's going to chase us off.
Yep.
Right? This is like the Pokemon block.
Yeah.
Like, come here, you can play Pokemon. No one's ever going to tell you you can't play Pokemon.
It's whenever you want. Like, when you walk in the store, there are people yeah. either playing the game or want someone to play the game with them. Yes. Like, it never fails.
Yeah. yeah. You can always get a game of Pokemon in.
Yeah.
And this also makes it a little bit hard and confusing because I have, no store does this, right? Where it's like, oh, Pokemon League Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then we'll start filling in cups and challenges, right?
Yeah.
And people are going to be like, well, which day do I come play Pokemon? It's like, every day.
Yeah, whenever you want.
Yeah, come play Pokemon whenever you want. And that's, again, like, that's why it's 100% or 99% Pokemon. Because there is no other place
yeah.
like it. And as soon as all the other stores start opening up and doing all the other things, then maybe, you know, there'll be less reason to come here. You can go closer to your home. But then we would have said we did something, right?
Yeah.
Like, we already forced it. Like, I would say, I'm not 100% can't confirm, but we caused the price drops in Seattle, right? There, when stores were out there scalping their customers.
All of them.
All of them. Except me.
Yeah.
People told owners.
Yeah. They're
like, you can't do this. They're like, why? They're like, yeah, we can. You can't get it anywhere. Like, no, we can. And we will. We'll yeah. go to tabletop and get it.
Like, I'll drive an extra half hour. Like, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and they did.
Oh, there
were people that were like, they came and they're like, so-and-so was trying to sell it for like 100. And I was like, and you had it for 50.
Yeah.
And so we're buying it from you, Brian. And I'm like, cool. And they're like, we're never going back there again. I'm like, sorry.
Right? Like, that wasn't my plan. I'm just trying to sell the cards for what they're worth.
For
what they should be worth.
For what a business can make and create a living off of. Right?
Yeah.
Right? I would say, if you have 40 employees,
mm-hmm.
right? You're making money doing something else.
It's yeah.
not just, you're not just making money by selling, oh, you have to sell these at double in order to make a, you know, living. No, that's yeah. not true. You don't have to. You have other stuff.
Yeah.
Like, the only person that probably could have justified selling it for double would have been me.
Yeah, the person who's Pokemon only.
Yeah, the person that's only selling Pokemon. I'm not selling anything else and not making money off anything else.
Yeah.
Right? Would be the only person who should have been justified to do it. And I didn't do it. I didn't have to.
See, and it's so perfect. That's one of those things of, like, this is the energy everyone should bring. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, is owning a card store a good way to become a millionaire?
No. It's a good way to go broke, probably, if you do it wrong. And so you go back to that original question of, like, you know, all these players, like, we were playing.
Yeah.
And it was funny because, you know, the same Dr. Frank was like, no, you don't want to do this. Like, it's crazy. Like, why would you want to, like, you have overhead, you're going to end up with employees, you're going to end up, like, having inventory, you're going to have unsold inventory, and there's a whole economy for it.
Yeah.
It's the worst way. If you really wanted to become a millionaire, just don't open a store on the open something online and sell stuff online and, you know, do things that way.
Yeah.
And we know a lot of folks who buy, sell, trade, you know, in person and online. I don't do it just to make the money.
Yeah.
I do it because I love doing it, right? It's like building community and sharing and like creating and then, you know, having the kids come in and my kids growing and becoming, you know, good players, right?
Yeah.
And not just good players, but they learn a lot.
Yes.
You know, they learn how to be good people.
Yep.
And that to me is like, that's what you better love that more than money, because that's what you're going to get. Like, you get more of that than anything else.
Yeah.
The money comes because you love it and you don't have to chase it. And hopefully it's sustainable and it continues to be sustainable. And we can continue to, like, be in a space.
Right? Yeah.
But as things get more expensive and rent gets more expensive, electricity gets more expensive, people get more expensive, labor gets more expensive, you just have to make adjustments, right? So you just make adjustments in other places. But it's not a good way to become a millionaire. Like, people look at that wall and be like, oh, that's worth a lot of money, huh? I'm like, have you looked at the cards? Like, no. Yeah, there's not huge money in selling sealed product to kids and collectors, especially when there's a huge market out there that you're competing with.
It's no secret that, like, TCG Player exists.
Yes.
Like,
if you want cards for $5, there you go.
They're
on TCG Player. And guess what? The prices are in my store, TCG Player low.
Yep.
Yeah. And why do I sell it in store and not on TCG Player? Because I don't have to pay the fee.
Yeah. Right? It's one of those, again, a win-win.
Yeah.
I come in, right, I need a Colossal VMAX.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, $3. Cool. What would I paid on TCG Player?
$3.
$3. Yeah. And what I got here next week. Yes. And I need it for today's deck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same thing. Right? And people feel good about that. So if you can stomach that kind of, like, ups and downs and losses, because sometimes it doesn't, you know, I would say there are cards out there that I bought from customers or gave them the trade value of 50% or 60%.
Yeah.
That's worth, like, oh, this is a $100 card. Ryan, you give me $60 for it? Yes. You know that it's early, right? Like, this card's going to drop. And then now the card's worth $30. And then I lost a whole, you know, a whole 30 on it. And then people go like, growing 60%, that's not a lot. Or 50% in cash, that's not a lot. You know, this card's worth a lot of money. I was like, it's worth a lot of money today.
Yeah.
Right? You know, you want to go in the back and see how much bulk I have that was, like, I bought at 2 cents. That's not worth, you know, that's not worth half a penny.
Yeah.
Like, it's a risk that you take. It happens, right? But it's, again, it's like, it's not, you can't do it for the money. Don't be a store owner. Do it for the money.
Do it for the love.
Do it for the love.
The community.
Yeah. And I would agree. If, like, if someone came by and said, Brian, we love what you're doing. Here's $2 million. We'd love to buy your business. I'd be like, cool. Buy my business.
It's all yours.
It's all yours. It's all yours. And I'll run the store for you for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Right? And I would, you know, like, That's all you need, $2 million, you know, invested. Like, you're good.
Get to hang out, play Pokemon, teach people Pokemon. Yeah. Just share the love of, like, I saw a Leon Hart video, and I want to open something because it looked really fun. You're like, all right, I got you. Let me transition you into loving the hobby that has given me so much of my life, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I remember watching Leon Hart, like, Polaris, that was one of Polaris' first ones. That and Darius, right?
Oh, yeah.
Just watching people crack packs.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I love it. Let's crack all the packs. Let's crack all the packs in the world. And then you'd be like, damn, we just cracked all those packs and we didn't come out. There's nothing in these packs, damn it. Like, why is it whenever we watch something, they always get something when we do it? There's nothing in there.
That was one of my favorites during that like, peak of the pandemic. People who know nothing about Pokemon, like, I've got a base set booster pack here, and they're opening it, and they're a Beedrill.
Beedrill.
What's this worth? $20? I paid $800 for this pack.
It's a rare. You got a rare Pokemon. Better get it graded. Better get rid of Hopesome will buy a PSA 10 Beedrill for like 200.
On a slightly related note, do you see Leon Hart put out his competitive team? Team Rare Candy is like pack openers and stuff of YouTube content creators. He also has the competitive aspect of it now.
Competitive pack opening?
No, competitive players.
I was gonna say, like, who can open the packs the fastest? Let's go. I'm in.
Oh, who can open the best? Who's the luckiest? But no. Yeah. So that's just on the competitive aspect of the podcast.
Really?
It was, yeah, it's really cool news. Yeah. So Frank Persick, Andrew Kennett, and Caleb Gettimer are all the like big. Yeah. So he's going big.
Oh.
But I'm excited to see someone with that much money and most importantly, that big of a YouTube following.
Yeah.
To do something competitive. Yeah.
Yeah. Good for them. I mean, Leon Hart, you know, Darium's, like, Tricky Jim and the Full Grip guys, like, to see what they do, like, that's I'd love for that to happen for us, right? Like,
I want this to be the Full Grip of the West.
Yes, that's what I say. Like, I always want to be Full Grip West Coast.
Yeah.
Because I feel like they're very much into the community more than it is about just making the money.
Yes.
Right? And that to me is like where things need to be in order for you to be a good store owner.
Oh yeah. One more important thing.
Yes.
Because you brought up a little while ago.
Yeah.
You're not into making money. You do have to make money.
Yes. We have to make
money. You buy bulk.
We buy bulk.
What are some of the best finds you found in bulk? Are there any like big hits of like, oh, they didn't realize what they were trading in? Or is it nothing better than like a prop egg?
There was one time I remember. So, actually, this happened just recently. Like, someone brought in a bunch of promo cards.
Yeah.
Right? And they're like, oh, we got this big box of promo cards that we got from our friend, and they just sold it all to us. And they got it from, you know, some Wizard of the Coast employee. And I was like,
Wizard of the Coast employee, okay.
Let me see what's in there then. Start going through the cards, and they're like, yeah, these are the ones that are shiny and hollow. And then these are the ones that are like, just whatever cards. And I'm like, all right, these are all nice. Like, what do you want to do with them? And you're like, well, we're thinking about getting them graded. I was like, excellent. If you're going to keep them, grade them. They're in decent condition. Perfect.
Yeah.
And then I start going through the other ones and I'm like, what do you want to do with these? They're like, oh, just sell those. Those aren't worth anything, right? And I was like, because they're not shiny, they're like, yeah, not shiny. So who cares? I'm like, well, this one happens to be a New York City promo.
Oh, God.
Pokemon Center. Let me show you what this is worth.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, my God. I was like, yeah, this card is worth all those cards. Like, oh, here's the other side to it, too. So, yeah, these two cards in perfect condition, in which they are, you should probably grade them because you probably get, like, you know, a few thousand dollars for them.
Yeah.
He's like, I was like, I had no idea. And I was like, and that's the thing. Most people don't know old cards.
Oh, no. Right? I don't.
I remember the first time we were sorting through all the stuff that I had bought from Jimmy.
Yep.
I had sat down with one of the local guys, and he was like going through it. And he's like, I think he was 16 at the time. Couldn't even drive. Right? Like, he's like going through, and he's like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. Right, we got to get all these cards graded, and then we got to get them back, and we got to sell them. Like, I was like, why? And he's like, all these cards are worth a hell of money. And I'm like, all right, cool. Well, where's the stuff that we play with? Like, I need the stuff we play with. I don't know this stuff. So, like, that happens all the time, right? Like, people buy the bulk. They bring the bulk. They bring all their cards. They don't know what scoop of nets are. They don't know what drizzles are. I love the collectors. And for that reason, right, the Pokemon community is not just, like, one person, right? It's not one type.
Yeah.
It's so many different types of people, right? You have your players, competitive players. You have your kind of, like, they like to just play the game, but they like to collect at the same time.
Yep.
You have your hardcore collectors that don't know a thing about playing the game.
Yeah.
And then you got kids and grandmas and everybody else.
Yeah.
And then you got these big collectors, pack breakers, online breakers, and they're like, oh, they get people buy it and they just want the hit.
Yep.
And then I have all this bulk. And they're like, Brian, here's all the bulk. And I was like, here's all the scoop of net and the
Dream House
and, you know, and all the Ultra Balls and right, every trainer. And we get tons of them. They don't, you know, and I pay 4 cents for them or 2 cents or 1 cent or whatever the rate is at the time. And they sit on a shelf.
Yep.
And someday they sell for it and make money. I think one of the newest, biggest, like, mistakes, and this one was funny because I was like, going to the bulk and I'm like, oh, let's look at this pack. And you pull it out and it's like a golden Inteleon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I'm like,
they shouldn't have been there. they know this.
It was stuck to probably, I think, at the back of the reverse holo.
Yeah.
I'm like, they didn't know this. Hey,
you're too honest.
I got a card you left behind. You're like, oh, I needed that one. That's all cool. All
right.
Yeah, but yeah, bulk. Bulk is another beast in a good market. Like, yeah. I think if you really wanted to find a way to make money, that's how you do it. Is you buy and sell bulk.
Yeah.
Right. That economy does exist.
Oh, for sure.
It's a good economy.
Someone who doesn't get any packs and has to buy all of my uncommons and commons and holo rares and you can make that money because someone's going to sell you that Spiritomb for 25 cents and then I'm going to come buy the Spiritomb for $3.
I don't sell Spiritombs for $3.
I think that's what I bought them for.
Oh, yeah.
And then thankfully I got in on the ground floor of Spiritomb because that came up to like a $10 card at one point.
Really?
Same with the Unbroken Bonds Mew.
Yeah.
That's another one that like, I just got to bite the bullet, $2.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not a $2 card.
It's not a $2 card anymore. I went to Vegas one time. We were go peruse the local card shops.
Yeah.
And then they didn't have any prices on any of the cards in the case. I was like, hey, you know what? How much for this Drizzile? They're like, $7. And I was like, this one Drizzles were worth two. And I was like, let me take it. I'm like, I want to buy a $7 Drizzle. Like, are these people insane? Like, I took it to the counter. They rang me up and they're like, $7. And I was like, where are you getting this price? Where does it come from? Like, it's not PCG player.
He's just making it up.
You just made their price up. I'm like, that's crazy. I was like, I sell V's for $2. Maybe I should just mark them all up to $5 and be like, so you don't want to buy $5 V, they're all V's.
Yeah, they're shiny. Yeah, and ultra rare.
Shiny. Ultra rare. Only one in like, I don't know, there's what, six in a box at the most?
Pretty good boxes, yeah. Yeah, probably about six.
Great box, six.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like, dude, $18, it would at least $5, $6 a piece. Easy.
Yeah.
Why not? Just like a Radiant.
Oh gosh, you get like one or two a box usually?
One or two a box. It's at least $50 a piece.
Pay for half the box.
You gotta at least pay for some of it. How was he gonna make money? Oh my god, like only if.
Brian, if anyone has listened to all of this, made it to the end,
thank you.
And still wants to eventually maybe buy a card store, own a card store.
Yes.
Do you have a last piece of advice or wisdom or discouragement potentially for anyone who wants to?
I honestly wish there were more good ones.
Yeah.
Right? Then I wouldn't have had to made one. I could just go to that one. I could have just went there enjoyed it, right? So you can see the stuff, right? So you can see the things that people don't have, right? It can be like a museum. You can enjoy being around other Pokemon players.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have it in your neighborhood, maybe there's a way to build it.
Yeah.
And if you can, and you can create that community, and they come around. So I would say, like, if you're in the middle of nowhere, build it. Like, people will come because Pokemon is that good. Like, the cards, the games, the videos, the company, it's that good. Like, if you build it, people around the area will come and enjoy it there.
Oh, yeah.
So, yes, if you can. If you come from money or you have money, please do. Like,
oh, yeah.
Go out there and spend money and make a Pokemon Center. Like, pay some employees $65,000, $75,000, $100,000 a year, what people are worth today.
Yeah.
Make sure they're good. Like, do it.
And the interesting thing about that one, if you can afford to pay employees, you can pay a lot of people, college students or even high school students, thinking of Kasten right now, who are an encyclopedia of card values.
Yes.
There's a lot of people out there who...
Yeah, who know?
They're very qualified job, and just no one wants to hire them because no one's Pokemon specific.
And then include other stuff, right? I think that's like the next iteration of Tabletop Village is we start to include when VGC, right? We're obviously going to include Pokemon Go as a hit, right? Be Pokemon centric, and like the Pokemon people will come.
Oh, yeah.
Tons of them, right? There's not enough. Like, if someone ever called me and be like, hey, I want to open something like this on the East Coast or in the middle of like Arizona or something, be like, yeah, what you need to know? I'll tell you all the things you need to know. What do you want to call it Tabletop Village Arizona? I don't care. Phoenix Tabletop.
Now we're talking. I got a place to visit when I'm down there. There are no good
locations. Yeah. Your mom will be like, Mom, guess what? You're opening up a Tabletop Village. It's franchise.
She's got to do something when she's retired.
Yeah. Might as well. So, yeah, that's what I, you know.
That's true.
If you can.
Yeah.
Do it. And make it. And just, you know, put everything into it. But the number one thing is you gotta love the game and love the people.
Yep.
And then you can. If you don't, then don't.
Because you're going to be around them a lot. They're going to want to talk to you
a
lot. I can confirm I will come in here and sometimes be like, hey, I need to tell you about this deck that I made.
Yeah. And that's the best part about being the shop owner is you get to spend time with people.
Yep.
Talk to people, do your thing. And then at some point we'll get down to business and sell some.
Eventually. So if people are interested and they want to get in contact with you, how can they get in contact with you?
Best way is through email. I'm old.
You're officially the oldest person we've had on the pod. I don't know if that's true, but
I probably am.
Technologically.
So if you really, really want to get a hold of me, the best way to do is to email me.
Okay.
Brian, Brian at tabletopvillage.com.
Perfect.
I will answer my emails. This next best way to find out what we're doing and everything else is Instagram, which is attached to Facebook. So whatever, you know, we post on Instagram, you go on Facebook. I know there's some people who still watch Facebook.
And you're the second person to say they're on Facebook, so you're not that old.
Yeah. And every once in a while, we do get on Twitter, and then we have a Discord.
Yep.
So you can always jump on Discord. I'm a noob at Discord. I'm still trying to figure it out.
I can confirm, yes.
Yes. I'm like, can you make a channel? Like, can you make a channel? Can you make a channel? Like, I don't know how to make channels. What are you talking about, channel? Like, yeah. But so that's the best way. Tabletop Village LLC.
Mm-hmm.
At Tabletop Village LLC. And then you can go to our website. And we post most of the what we're selling and what we're doing and our calendar. All on tabletopvillage.com.
Awesome. I'll have some of those linked down below. So if anyone out there happens to be listening to this and is actually serious, like, hey, this sounds kind of cool. You're interested in talking to someone who's done it?
Yeah.
Reach out to Brian. Or even if you're just kind of flirting with the idea a little bit.
Yeah.
Otherwise, hopefully you enjoyed the episode. I enjoyed hearing the inner workings of the store that I go to all the time. And if you're ever in Seattle, I cannot recommend enough to come here. Like you said, like a museum.
Yeah.
You will see things Pokemon related you will not see anywhere else, literally in the world. Yeah. There's some really cool collectible items here. And most importantly, this man will tell you anything you want to do in Seattle. You can come to the city with no itinerary. Come to Tabletop first. All right, what should I do this weekend? Brian, I'll give you some suggestions.
I will tell you where to eat or anything like that.
And at the very least, everywhere around this city.
Yeah.
Or everywhere around the store has tons of good food.
You can't go wrong. You can literally come here, stay at a hotel, like, you know, a block down the way, and be happy. Get everywhere and do everything in Seattle.
Of course, myself, you can find me on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube at @Mellow_MagikarP. This has been another episode of the Lake of Rage podcast. Catch you all next week.